Epilogue. She felt herself leaving her body, her spirit flying up through the glacial ice, up, up into the air. She saw the lights of Calladay far ahead and below, and lamented the last beautiful glimpse of the home she so loved. She thought of her friends left behind, thought of her fellow Biancorso soldiers, of the joys and the proud scars of that last battle and the throw, one guided by pure determination and will, and that too seemed to her an out-of-body experience, much akin to this. And she was up among the merry dancers, shimmering in greens and purples and whites, and she felt as if her spirit was joining in that dance of exultation. The magic swirled and tingled, and it was a beautiful thing to her, almost an explanation of Catscalci's unexpected turn, of the power nearly 50,000 voices had lent to that wounded southerner. Her spirit lifted higher and higher, up beyond the northern lights, flying fast for the moon and the stars. Up and up, she saw the curve of Toril, then the whole of the globe, and still she flew without tether into the heavens, the astral plane. Calladay was gone, to her great lament. Her friends were gone. Biancorso was gone. She was sure that she had heard the last cheers of Catscalci. "It wasn't your fault," Alina told Galathea as they began donning their skis. "Don't be foolish. Azudana above all insisted that we follow them. Azudana alone hesitated in our retreat when the battle turned." "And what was that?" Bessie asked. "It was no Slod, and no Cante or Endivi." "I think it was the great cat," Galathea admitted, but shaking her head, for it had happened so very fast, and she had caught just a quick glimpse before they were gone. "Catty Bree's cat." "Who was no enemy," said Alina. "Is it possible that our Azudana—" Her voice trailed off, and she sniffled a bit, gathered up her poles, and pushed away. The other four followed quickly. They skied out of the rift and turned fast, keeping the glacial wall on their right as they sped along, not stopping at all until they came to the next real rift and the encampment where the rest of the expedition waited. On Galathea's command, all of them, Avendrau, Kurit, Orok, and Ulutian, broke camp immediately and rushed away. She had lost the southerners. Now she had lost Azudana. She wasn't about to risk any more. Jarlaxle sat in the dark against a magical wall, and beneath his great hat, which had turned into a huge, sturdy umbrella at his beckon, the handle set against the floor between his straightened legs. He could feel the weight pressing down upon it, the ice that had flown into this space behind him, the same ice that now encased his outstretched feet, and he could only hope that the umbrella would hold back the press. Above him, the rumble of the wind gradually died away to nothingness, leaving behind a silence as profound as the darkness and as cold as the ice. He wasn't quite sure what had happened. What was he to make of those magical cyclones, the likes of which he had never before seen or heard of? All he knew was that his friends were gone and lost to him, and that he was alone in a hole, sealed in by a mound of hardening ice and with hordes of formidable monsters outside. This wasn't the way he had planned it. Jarlaxle never liked when things went the way he hadn't planned. Everything came as flashes of light and swirls of darkness for Azudana, who felt as if she were swimming through the heavens, circling the world that had been her home, out of control of her movements and unsure if this was death or life or something in between. She began to plummet, but was not afraid. She came back into the sky of Toril, and it was light, not night, and below was a land blanketed in snow, with huge trees and towering mountains, and a town, a small town, set in a region of fields and forests, and a grand mansion built on a hill overlooking all the other structures. Down she went, plummeting for it, but she wasn't afraid, not until she neared the roof and kept going. Right through, but without collision, a spirit, insubstantial and then not. Azudana found herself sitting on a wooden floor in a small room with a closed door right before her and a giant black cat standing beside her. Only then did she understand that it was Guinevere, K Catty Bree's cat, that had taken her on this ride, and that she certainly wasn't dead and wasn't a disembodied spirit, at least not any longer. Now she was just Azudanna again, lost and unsure. The great cat's ears went back, and she gave a long, loud growl. The Avendrow didn't know what to do. The door burst open a few heartbeats later, and a human woman appeared, her face going from an expression of surprise to one of abject shock. She was older than Catty Bree, it seemed, with dark hair and wearing a woolen dress and a colorful shawl. Beside Azudanna, Guinevere faded away to nothingness. Azudanna didn't move. She heard talking in the hall, the voice of a man, but she couldn't understand the words. "What is it, Penelope?"